Welcome, y'all. I'm your host, Christopher Etienne, and you are listening to the System Impacting Podcast powered by STEMOPS.
STEMOPS, which stands for STEM Opportunities in Prison Settings, is an alliance of higher education partner organizations committed to ensuring that STEM preparation during and post-incarceration is commonplace and successful. More specifically, STEMOPS' mission is to ensure all persons impacted by the carceral system are able and encouraged to pursue a culturally responsible and equitable high-quality STEM education and career. STEMOPS is funded by the National Science Foundation as a part of the INCLUDES initiative, which aims to expand access to STEM careers by underrepresented groups. You could learn more about STEMOPS by visiting the website stem-ops.org. That's STEM-OPS.org.
On this episode, we will continue our discussion around the presence of justice-impacted people
in STEM education and STEM professions. Our goal is to look at their journeys in their respected STEM fields before and after incarceration. We hope to use the experience of these scholars to highlight the importance of educational equity and critique discriminatory tactics that contribute to STEM exclusion in professional and academic spaces. Adam El Sherbini is a justice-impacted professional who transitioned from incarceration into a career in STEM. In this episode, he will speak about his journey and the challenges he encountered, using his experience as a student, a mentor, and now a seasoned STEM professional. Adam will highlight the importance of higher education and prison programs, the necessity of wraparound services for individuals transitioning out of prison, and strategies we could implement to ensure that STEM opportunities are more inclusive towards the formerly incarcerated community. Adam counts himself fortunate to have parents who instilled strong math principles in him at a young age. He believed their instruction helped him establish a foundation in math and placed him on a trajectory to excel in the STEM field.
I was born to Egyptian parents who moved here, obviously, before I was born. So I grew up in more of a conservative household, not conservative in a political sense, but conservative as far as like parents had me focused on school. They would give me workbooks to do after school. And I would say that was probably very helpful for me in my journey through STEM, only because it sort of laid a foundation. They sort of limited my TV exposure, maybe a little bit each day after school cartoons. But after that, TV went off, homework open. After homework, if I finished early, like it wasn't like I could just go watch TV and nothing, you know, they would have me crack open workbooks and do extra problems and stuff like that. So, you know, that continued up until maybe like around middle school. I don't know exactly which year, but, you know, I started losing. Like, it's not that I was ever really interested in schoolwork, but, you know, as a younger kid, your parents have a lot more control. When I got older, I started having a little more independence and started being do a little bit more ripping and running, less focused on school, started getting into trouble. But I would say that just those sort of early years of having that sort of family support pushing me to do extra work sort of helped out. None of that really turned around until I got to prison.
Incarceration can be a dehumanizing experience that stunts educational growth and excludes the prison population from opportunities. Despite these harrowing challenges, Adam found a semblance of hope from an instructor in a higher education and prison program. He says this instructor introduced him to post-secondary educational opportunities during his incarceration and paved the pathway for him to enroll in college upon his release from prison.
Once I got to prison, there was some support there for me in the MVP program. There was a professor, Dr. Roden. He was coming into the prison and having college classes offered. I didn't really have access to him for a while. There was a long waiting list. And when I finally did, it's not that there were any STEM classes there, but it was my first college experience. So I took a history course. and a communications course. And that was my first sort of exposure to college. But obviously, like when you're in prison, there's really not a whole lot to be excited about or look forward to. So it sort of gave me, you know, something to focus on, something to look forward to.
Adam considers himself fortunate to have a supportive family who helped him transition back into society post-incarceration. He believes positive influences and support systems determines a person's ability to succeed or fail, and he credits his loved ones and mentors for his success.
When I came home, I got released to a halfway house. Dr. Roden basically had sort of mentioned the whole time while I was in prison that if you do well, we can try to get you into Rutgers when you get out, which was the state university in New Jersey. So when I got to the halfway house, he kept his word and he followed up with me and helped me with my application to Rutgers. And it just so happened I came home from the halfway house in September. He was on top of everything. Like, he knew my release date because my charge was 85%. So I was coming home on a specific day. He basically helped me plan for that and have my application and everything situated. So that way I went to college from the halfway house for like a day or two. And then I was released. And from there, I started going to Rutgers. So I was released to my parents' house, which was also a huge help because I had family support. I know a lot of people, you know, they come home, they have nowhere to go. I think really like a big part of what helped me was really just having support the whole way. I had my family supporting me, like I said, making me do workbooks and stuff when I was real young. And Dr. Roden, you know, in the MVP program while I was in prison, all the way through the halfway house, and then coming back home, having a place to live, and all of those things sort of contribute to where I am now.
Another driver of Adam's journey is his religious faith. He says that the hardships of incarceration often encourages us to seek out religion for guidance and answers. During his darkest hour, Adam's faith, coupled with the educational opportunities extended to him, motivated him to seek out a pathway towards scholarship and success.
When I was in prison, I was on waiting list for college. College was just sort of something that I signed up for when I got there because I was able to, because I had a high school diploma when I got there, I just signed up for it. It wasn't a redemption story. There wasn't a switch that flipped through college. It was actually a switch that got flipped through my faith. So similar to school, my parents sort of laid the groundwork for me at a very young age with my religion. I was raised Muslim at a very young age. My parents taught me to pray and instilled Muslim values in me. They laid the groundwork for that when I was young. And I always looked at it as more as like a chore. And when it came to social acceptance, it's not something that I really wanted. I wasn't too interested in it. But I think a lot of people, when they get incarcerated, sort of turn back to their faith. And when I first got to prison, I signed up for the college program, but it wasn't something that was available to me for at least a year. And similarly, like, I started reading religious books and going to the Muslim service, but there was an advanced Quran class for incarcerated people who could read Arabic. So the imam at the prison allowed me to join that class. And also at the time, I had an open case. So I was sentenced to a 4-flat for drug possession, but I had an open assault case that I was going back and forth to court for. And I was praying that God give me 4-flat ran concurrent so that I wouldn't have to do it additional time. And I actually got sentenced to a 3 with an 85. And not only that, I got sentenced to it about a year in to time that I was already doing. And that year that I did, the judge said that didn't count. I basically had to start over. And so for me, it felt like my prayers weren't answered. But it was around that time that it was my turn to go to a college class. You know, now all of a sudden I was at the top of the waiting list. I was able to go to the next college class. And I felt that was basically like a sign, you know, like, because I just got hit with that. It was extremely disappointing to me. I don't know why. I had some hope that I wasn't going to have to do a lot of extra time. But in hindsight, you know, looking at the charges and things, I should have known that. But even still, even though I didn't know it, it still felt crazy to get sentenced to more time and to hear that the time that I had done, the year that I did, didn't count. So the college class was sort of the silver lining. And I think the combination of the sentence along with me being able to start college, that was when I sort of was like, okay, this is my purpose now. This is what I need to focus on. This is what's going to get me through this. And this is what I'm going to do after. Before that, you know, I had signed up for college, but it was just something to do. You know, I was still planning on going home, selling drugs, doing everything else that I was doing before. But, you know, I think that second sentence along with the college class sort of just, that was when I made a change.
During his first day home, Adam had a chance to catch up with family members and old acquaintances. Although these interactions seemed minor at the time, they would play a pivotal role in his academic and professional journey.
So while I was in the halfway house, I actually was able to work for one of the brothers who has an accounting office on top of a Mazda that used to be on Branford Place in Newark. And so he just like let me work for him kind of like as a way to be able to get out of the halfway house and have a job each day, and also to be able to go to the masjid like on my breaks and things like that. Like it doesn't sound like much, but when you're incarcerated, little things like that means the world, you know. So I'm really grateful to him for that, and that's kind of what had me thinking I wanted to be an accountant. I really had no idea what I wanted to do. My first day home from prison, you know, me and my sister, I went to the mall and I ran into this old head from around the way that, you know, he was actually a friend of mine's father. Like, I want to say that he's somebody that I look up to or anything like that, but he's just like an older person that I've known for a long time. And he knew that I was in prison. He was surprised to see me. And he was like, oh man, like, it's good to see you. What's going on? What are you up to? And obviously I was proud to say that I was in college, because college was never really a part of my plan and not something that I was really interested in. So I didn't know much about what I was up to. It was just day one. Like, I had just got released. And so I told him, I was like, you know, I'm in college. And he's like, oh, what are you studying? And I said, I don't know. You know, I'm just in college. And he was like, oh, well, do engineering. You know, if you do engineering, you always have a job rebuilding all the roads and bridges. And, you know, that was he sort of, I think, planted the seed for me. And even then, when he said that, that wasn't like, oh, that's what I'll do. It just sort of was something that was like in the back of my mind. But when I did, you know, that first year, I actually started with Chris. We started going to college together. He was already home. I was from the halfway house, but it was the same semester. We both started at Rutgers together. I actually placed into pre-calc. I took the placement test from the halfway house. Like, they brought us from the halfway house to Rutgers University to take this placement test. Like I was saying, it wasn't a traditional trajectory. It isn't a traditional trajectory for justice impacted students. And I had no idea it was my trajectory either. I don't know exactly when the decision got made. I know that the things that sort of led me to the decision were, one, like, as I mentioned, sort of having my parents that forced me to like do math problems when I was younger. I feel sort of laid a foundation so that math didn't feel alien to me in the same way that it does to a lot of people when the time finally came. And then there was that, you know, my friend, his name is Mark, his father, whose name is also Mark, that when I ran into him at the mall, that he sort of planted that seed for me. Like, if I do study engineering, then there will be plenty of jobs. I would say that sort of played a role too, only because it happened on such a pivotal day. Like, that first day that I came home, everything that happened that day kind of stuck with me.
Adam states instructors from different disciplines may be more or less receptive towards the justice impacted community. He believes we should treat every student with empathy and understanding, and is grateful for instructors who focused on his worth as a student instead of his past mistakes.
So my third semester, I had an expository writing professor. It took a liking to me. And I didn't tell anyone in the university, because at the time I was on parole, and I really kept the fact that I was previously incarcerated. I kept that to myself. I didn't share that with a lot of people. It didn't feel like the kind of thing I could share with a lot of people, but my expository writing professor was the first person who I shared that with, and he was surprisingly receptive to it. I don't know what it is about the humanities. They were so receptive to it because they were almost happy to hear that story. The math professors, the physics professors, they don't care. They hear an excuse. That's all they hear. They hear an excuse. And if you need an excuse because you're on parole, why are you on parole? That's not the question he's going to say, but that's the reaction that he's going to give you. So I would say that, yeah, like they should be more like the humanities professors. You're my professor. You're here to help me succeed, you know? And that's the attitude of my expository writing professor, my history professors. The attitude in STEM is very much, I'm here to evaluate you and it's your job to compete. And so there's a lot less support in that sense. I'm not really sure why. I think it's because many of the students have a lot more academic background and a lot more support that they're just used to that high level of students not needing anything. So that was definitely a big part of it. Just the professors, they're not there to assist, really.
Adam remains humble through his educational and professional experience. He believes that we are more than a sum of our parts, and exceptionality doesn't come from an individual. Instead, our greatness is tied to our access to support systems, resources, and opportunity.
I don't believe that there is any real greatness or anything like that in me or in most people. And I don't say that as a talking point or anything like that. I really believe that the overwhelming majority of people, myself included, are mediocre people. I honestly believe a huge portion of the prison population could be doing exactly what I'm doing. They didn't have the resources available to them. I really don't see myself as having done anything great. I feel like I have great people who were there along the way. It's crazy when you think about it. I don't mean to say if all of them weren't there. I think if any one of those crucial people weren't there, I wouldn't be where I am today. It's every step along the way from, you know, my parents growing up, to Dr. Roden, my parole officer. She did violate me when I believe that she shouldn't have, but at the same time, she wasn't on me in the same way because she knew that I was going to college. And I saw how she was violating a lot of the other people who was going to parole. That was helpful. My expository writing professor played a crucial role. Dawn Gross was one of the ladies who worked at the halfway house. Even when you talk about the halfway house, like I'm sure if you were to talk to Ms. Gross, she would tell you that she was happy to help me because I was trying to help myself. But at the same time, I only had that ability to help myself because I was in that college program from Dr. Roden. So even that wasn't myself. And then when you go on to me coming home and having a place to live and access to food, all of that stuff. Also, just having MVP and all the other people who were in the program who were in the same position as me, we may not have supported each other financially, but we were there for each other because we all had a similar background. We all were coming from similar places and we all had similar goals. And I think just that group alone, you know, was a blessing too. I honestly feel like I barely made it through university. I mean, I was dealing with a lot of other things on the side. And I really feel like at that last year, I feel like I almost didn't make it, but it was a lot of support. And I really do, I can't stress it enough. I know that if those same pillars of support and resources were made available to half the prison population, they probably would be doing better than I am.
According to Adam, STEM education comes with its own culture and challenges. Things like exclusionary practices are normalized in the STEM community. Students who hail from non-traditional backgrounds similar to Adam's are often juggling pressing responsibilities and can't help but feel like an outcast in this field.
I definitely experienced a few instances of like gatekeeping along the way, some seemingly intentional and some probably secondary, I guess. If I had to sort of list them all, I guess I would say the first, just access to math and science exposure young. So I had access to math exposure as a child through my family, because coming from sort of an immigrant family who really, really sort of had a strict household, I had access to workbooks that they would make me do and that sort of thing. But as far as school goes, I wasn't taking AP or science and STEM courses and classes in public school. I didn't have any exposure to that. Yes, I did place into pre-calc, which compared to some of my peers who were also coming from prison was a step up. Compared to the students in the engineering school, these guys are placing into Calc 2, Calc 3. You know, they're freshmen, fresh out of high school, and they're already exposed to physics. They're already exposed to chemistry. They're already exposed to calculus, higher calculus. So that right there, I felt, put me at an initial disadvantage. Then just applying to the School of Engineering. I mean, admittedly, I didn't know that engineering was what I wanted to do, so there was no way I could have applied to that directly. But a lot of the other students were accepted directly into the School of Engineering, whereas me, I had to sort of really work really hard just to get there, right? Just to transfer from the School of Arts and Sciences into the School of Engineering. There's a lot of requirements you got to do. There's a sort of grade point average that you have to keep. I mean, it takes work, and there isn't a lot of groundwork or for students who are trying to figure it out in the way that I was, who didn't really have the same like guidance through it, it's not easy to do. It's not easy to navigate. Luckily, there was a dean at the School of Engineering who I did find, who was actually introduced to me by my EOF counselor, who was familiar about the whole MVP program, who sort of helped guide me in the later stages. But I do feel like that was a bit of a roadblock. Then finally getting into the School of Engineering, there's that where I felt probably most excluded. So, you know, I sort of had it in my mind that if I can get into the School of Engineering, that I'll be straight. But I got there and, you know, I was grateful and proud and happy to be there. But all of a sudden, the same receptiveness that I've found from my expository writing professor, who was excited to learn that I was coming to his class after having been incarcerated, it was the opposite effect in those engineering classes. I mean, at that point, I felt a little bit less guarded about sharing my past because it was received so well in my humanities courses that I thought I could share it. I remember sharing it with a girl in my physics class. We used to sit next to each other each class and joke together, tee-hee, ha-ha, a lot of that. And one day I opened up to her and shared the fact that, you know, that, you know, this is the reason why I'm a little bit older than most of the other students in the class. And I noticed that literally the next class and from then on, she was sitting in a different part of the classroom. She didn't want to sit next to me anymore. Not only that, but I can't speak for all STEM. I think you got to keep that in mind. My experience is with the engineering school. But with the engineering school, everything's graded on a curve. The way you're evaluated, the class average might be like 58. Or 60 or something like that. And so what the professors do is they'll make that the high score, you know, an A, and they'll make the average score a C, and they curve it. So it's not really, you're not really getting graded on your performance. You're getting graded on your performance relative to the other students that you're in the class with. These students who took calculus in high school and who took physics in high school, and these students who have their meal plan paid for and they live on campus and they don't have any children and everything is just sort of laid out for them just to succeed. And your grade is really based on how well you do compared to them. And a lot of them would form study groups. And if you're not in those groups, then it can make things a lot more difficult. And it's hard to be in those groups when, you know, really, I'm not from that same background. Like my connection was to my brothers and sisters in MVP who were coming from a similar place, and they weren't taking engineering classes. So yeah, while I would be on Bush campus where the engineering classes were, after class, I got to run to work, or I'm basically spending time with students who aren't in those study groups. And it took me till my senior year when I finally was able to really connect with some people and be able to participate in those groups. I would say that that's sort of like a secondary roadblock to success, I think, in STEM, is just having that cultural connection with other students in those classes. And not having it can make things a lot harder.
A great misconception is that a person's incarceration ends once they're released from prison. The fact is, a criminal record follows a justice-impacted person for life and can impede their ability to participate in various educational and employment sectors.
So I studied mechanical engineering when I was in college. When I finally got into the School of Engineering, I had to declare a major that next semester. So I had to choose between mechanical, civil, environmental, electrical, all these different engineering disciplines. And I specifically chose mechanical engineering because aerospace engineering was a concentration. At Rutgers University, when you major in mechanical engineering, you can either concentrate on energy systems or you can concentrate on aerospace. And aerospace was what interested me at the time. So I chose to major in mechanical engineering, and then I chose to concentrate on aerospace engineering. And for aerospace engineering, there are certain internships that are suggested. And so my junior year, I started applying to a lot of those internships. And a lot of the internships for that concentration were basically, I guess you'd call them high security companies. And I wasn't hearing back from anyone on any of those. And it was that dean that I had mentioned earlier who kind of told me, you know, it could be the background, you know, maybe try switching to energy systems and applying for an internship that's not aerospace related. And as soon as I did that, I got an interview with HydroWorks. I started my internship there. So I don't know that applies to all STEM, but certain areas will be exclusionary based on your background. And I don't know that HydroWorks wouldn't have. They didn't ask me if I had ever been incarcerated, so I didn't tell them. And I kind of flew under the radar, I think, in that way.
Despite being a STEM professional, Adam doesn't believe that his field is inclusive towards the justice-impacted community and wants formerly incarcerated students interested in a STEM career to prepare themselves for the obstacles and challenges they will encounter along their journey.
I would just say that, you know, expect an uphill battle. Don't expect it to be easy. I think college alone for justice-impacted people is going to be difficult. I think when it comes to STEM, and again, I don't know if this is specific for engineering or applies to all STEM, I think that engineering in particular is one of those professional or I guess technical degrees where people, I guess, see it as, you know, all I need to do is get an engineering degree and I can get a job straight out of college. And I think because it has that sort of stigma, they require a lot more work. They're a lot harder on the students in undergrad than a lot of the other degrees. So you may have to put in a lot more time than peers that aren't taking a technical degree and plan to go to graduate school. So my advice would be to try to get into those circles that you feel excluded from as early as you can. And because they're headed the same place that you're trying to get to. And don't feel discouraged if you're not in that circle right away. Don't feel discouraged if you feel like you're being excluded. Be prepared to work twice as hard. That's just what it's going to take. I would say that it's worth it, but I would also say don't butt your head up against the wall. If you find that the field that you're studying or the direction that you're headed is not welcoming to previously incarcerated people, then seriously consider going in a different direction. I'm not saying leave STEM alone entirely, but it's sad to see people go travel really, really far down a road and only to find out that they don't have access to that destination. That's kind of what I did. You know, I realized aerospace just wasn't prepared to accept justice impacted people yet. So I wasn't going to beg them to. You know, I found an alternate route, ended up working out for me. So I think that would be a major part.
Adam states that the only way to increase participation in the STEM field is by making math and science classes more accessible for directly impacted students. He believes through tutoring, higher education and prison programs, and mentorship initiatives, we can normalize the STEM experience and increase recruitment and retainment in this field.
To the employers and to the professors, I don't know that they're listening to my advice, but my advice would be that basically by neglecting a huge portion of the population, you're also neglecting a huge portion of the ideas, a huge portion of the potential, and that you're doing not only people a disservice, but yourself, your university, your company, your organization a disservice. Like, I think anyone that's coming home from prison or is home from prison and is looking to pursue a degree in engineering or STEM, you're going to have to work twice as hard as a lot of the students that are there. So the best way to prepare students for that world is to get them used to doing a lot of math, you know, a lot of science. It's a different type of studying than you would for a reading intensive or writing intensive class. So I would say tutoring is a big thing, but also the guidance through the requirements. Like oftentimes the requirements for School of Engineering or the requirements for School of Psychology, they're going to be different. And navigating those schools is going to be different. And there's going to be a lot less welcome mats along the way. So anything that these college and prison courses can do to sort of help the students navigate those spaces, I think would be a helpful resource to the students. Also, I guess allies to them or maybe more mentors to them. If someone in prison or recently released from prison is seriously pursuing a degree in engineering or any STEM field, they should have access to someone who's in that field, preferably a previously incarcerated person that they can call, not necessarily to help with the coursework, but for advice on what to prioritize, what not to prioritize. That can, I think, save them a lot of time.
Some people are not STEM people is a saying that has become normalized in the educational field. Adam dismisses this as a myth, arguing that anyone motivated to learn can excel in the STEM field. He states that the issue of student engagement falls on the shoulders of instructors and tutors, and believes that the only way to motivate students is by meeting them where they are and constantly encouraging them to practice math.
A lot of students that I tutored, they just say from on the first day, I hate math. You know, I'm not any good at math. There's just a lack of motivation, I think, among students. They get discouraged because a lot of people have this misconception that math is this foreign thing that they just can't do and that they were never good at. And I think a lot of that has to do with the way it's taught in a lot of schools. And even if you listen to some of the responses that you got from your tutor saying, oh, well, they're not capable or they're not interested, that's somebody who's not doing their job as a tutor, right? I think you find different kids. You find some students who aren't motivated, but have the math background. And then you have the opposite. And the hardest thing to do as a tutor is to motivate. I can teach you math if you're motivated. But students get motivated when they're doing well. That aha moment, nothing is more motivating for a student than that. That's what I've found as a tutor with math. if I'm working with a student on, let's say, Algebra 2, and I'm finding that this student is having a very difficult time, why don't we take it back a level? Why don't we go back to Algebra 1 then? That might not be motivating for the student. He might feel like now he's wasting his time. But if he goes back to Algebra 1 and starts doing well, then that'll motivate him as well as better prepare him for Algebra 2. I think, first of all, that there is this sort of misconception that STEM students and STEM professors are just wired differently. That's incorrect. What I think is a truth is that math should be studied very differently than history or English. The reason for that is because math builds on itself. And the more you use it, just like any other language, the better at it you'll get. There is some truth, just like someone who learned Spanish when they were 4 years old is always going to be better at Spanish than someone who learned it when they were 20 years old, right? Because they learned it when their brain was still developing. The same is true for math, but it doesn't mean that someone who learns it when they're 20 years old can't be great at it. You can't. It's all in the practice. It's all in laying the foundation, doing things in order. And I think people get frustrated and give up. And when I say people, I'm not just saying the students, the tutors too, they get frustrated and they give up because they're stepping in and that foundation isn't there. So you got to go back and you got to practice from wherever, whatever level you left it off at. You can't just jump. Even if that level is math 303, then you got to go back to math 302. But I really don't think that there is some different wiring or different mindset. It's just a different level of practice that they've had.
Adam lays out current restrictions in the field of STEM that excludes justice-impacted people from climbing the professional ranks. Adam explains his personal experiences with these challenges and how they continue to impact his ability to progress in the field of STEM.
Having an engineering degree, which I have, in an engineering position, but then there's also being a professional engineer is, I guess, a certificate that you get that allows you to then put your stamp on drawings and calculations and things like that. And becoming a professional engineer is something that costs a lot of money. You have to take an exam. You have to do an apprenticeship for a certain number of years. Then you have to take another exam. And it's different in every state. So it's sort of like being a lawyer, I guess. Like, you got to pass the bar in New York. That doesn't mean that you can practice in Connecticut, So every state has different rules, and even different disciplines have different rules. I have yet to be able to do that. New Jersey, I think, will allow you to do it. They'll allow you to get your professional engineering license with a record, depending on what your charges are. But because the company I work for is actually a Canadian company, New Jersey is very, very exclusionary, not necessarily with the record. I mean, I don't know because I haven't applied, but it is exclusionary with who you do your apprenticeship with. And since my company is actually a Canadian company and I work with licensed engineers who are licensed in Ontario and Alberta, I can't get my New Jersey licensure while working with them. Basically, my roadmap to it would have been to get licensed in Ontario first and then get licensed, leverage that license to get licensed in New York. And then through New York, I could get to New Jersey. But because Ontario is my first step, I think Canada still, while they're great, I think when it comes to healthcare and all that sort of stuff, they're still pretty bad when it comes to criminal justice and justice impacted people. So unfortunately, that's a bit of a roadblock for me. I'm still able to do my work and stuff like that. It's just haven't been able to get that license yet.
Thank you for joining us for part two of STEM Education and Professions in the System Impacted podcast series. we took a deep dive into STEM exclusion and educational and professional opportunities and what could be done to help diversify this field for justice-impacted people. As we attempt to level the playing field, we must remember to implement people-centered instruction, tutoring, mentoring networks, and person-centered strategies to create equitable, inclusive experiences for our justice-impacted scholars in STEM.